We finally got there through every team in the National Football League in our countdown to kickoff series today. It's the reigning champs, the Philadelphia Eagles. Joe Ostrowski, Sam Panionovic with you, and we're breaking down everything related to the Eagles and how we think they're going to follow things up after just pure domination throughout the regular season and the playoffs. We bring in Dave Zangaro to talk about that, NBC Sports Philadelphia beat writer. Dave, I didn't think we'd start there, but I guess we've got to go non-Eagles, but it's Eagles for a second because Micah Parsons impacts everybody. You have an in-conference trade, a trade within the Eagles division, staying in conference, though, and now people are looking at, like, whoa, now the Packers are a true Super Bowl contender. They enter that conversation if they weren't there before. Do you look at now the Packers and say, oh, I think they're really, really close to Philadelphia now?
They're closer. Yeah, no question about it. Micah Parsons is a special player. And whenever you play him, it's like you got to know exactly where he is on the field. You have to kind of tailor your game plan around him. So it is kind of funny. The Eagles go from week one, really probably tailoring that game plan already, to throwing that out the window a little bit. It's an interesting dynamic because on one hand, they're probably really happy to have him out of the division. They don't have to play him twice a year, every single season. I know Lane Johnson and Jordan Mailata, their two tackles, are probably pretty happy about that, but they do play the Packers this year. And you're right. I mean, I don't think the Cowboys were a significant threat when you're looking at the NFC as a whole. And now I think the Packers are. So obviously a really kind of a crazy trade that in Philadelphia, we look at it like Howie Roseman never lets it get to that point. He would never lose a 26-year-old star player like that just because he didn't plan it out well. So it's, you kind of see the differences in the way the two organizations are run right now.
I have so many questions about the offense. I guess we should just start with the guy that Philly lost. Of course, Kellen Moore going to New Orleans. He was their designer, their play caller, their OC. So he's out of the way. Tell us what we need to know about the new regime on offense. Who's calling the plays and what have you seen so far?
Yeah. So yeah, Kellen Moore did some nice things last year. What I will say is there's still like room for growth as a passing offense. You know, we look back at last year, and everything, when you win a Super Bowl, everything just like, it must have gone perfectly the entire season. That really wasn't the case. I mean, they ran the football better than just about any team in the league. They had a great running back, great offensive line. But when it came to the passing offense, it wasn't great all the time. It was definitely a little lackluster at moments. And I don't think we're going to see wholesale changes offensively. It wasn't like Kellen Moore brought in a system and they just ran that system. It was kind of a meshing of what, you know, Nick Sirianni and Kevin Petullo, who's the new offensive coordinator now, had done. And Kellen Moore added a little bit of his own dynamic to it, and he called the plays. But I don't expect it to look very different. And honestly, it didn't look as different last year as people thought it would. You know, Kellen Moore comes in, you're expecting to see a lot of the staples that he had run in Dallas, and that wasn't really the case. It was a lot of the things that the Eagles have tailored to Jalen Hurts specifically, and that we saw those things again. So Kevin Petullo will call plays. It's something that Nick Sirianni gave up during his first season in 2021, and I don't think he's ever going to take that back. I don't think he wants to do it. He thinks his time is better served managing the team and letting someone else call the offensive plays. And it's collaborative in some sense, right? They go through it weekly and they have situational work. And so they're kind of prepared. And there are moments where Nick will interject, but Kevin Petullo, it's his first time being an offensive coordinator. Everyone I've spoken to thinks he'll have a good knack for calling plays, but we really won't know until next Thursday when he actually has to do it.
That was not a surprise, not a Liam Cohen situation where in the offseason there was a lot of back and forth. Hey, we'll make you the highest paid offensive coordinator of all time. There was nothing of that throughout the entire season. It was, okay, Kellen Moore is going somewhere. He's getting a job. It's just a matter of where, especially once we saw the results of what the Eagles offense was putting out there on a week-to-week basis. Was there ever a moment where it wasn't Petullo, where there were real conversations or ideas thrown out there about bringing in somebody else outside of making an in-house promotion?
Not really. I think it was always Petula's job. And, you know, I think some of that comes with the Super Bowl win. When you win, you kind of – Nick Sirianni has a little more sway in that building, and that's his guy. He actually – when Nick took the job in 2021, Petula was with him in Indianapolis. They flew on the jet together to Philly. So he's been the right-hand man. He was the passing game coordinator for the first several years of Sirianni's tenure here. So – I think it was pretty natural. And there's some fear in that, right? Like the last time they had an internal promotion, it was Brian Johnson, and it didn't go well, even though I don't know. I think Johnson ended up being the scapegoat of the 2023 season when it wasn't really his fault. But yeah, it was always going to be Petula. And I it's not just a relationship with Nick Sirianni that got him the job. I also think his relationship with Jalen Hurts, it's very clear that Jalen respects Petula's football acumen. And he respects what he does, and those two seem to have a good relationship, which does mean a lot because so much of what the team does offensively is tailored to the quarterback, his strengths, his weaknesses. So I think it was always going to be Petula, and yeah, it wasn't surprising when we got the word finally that it was him.
Barkley touched the ball 482 times last year, if you include the playoffs, 482. You would think there would be a plan in place to sort of circumvent the wear and tear and maybe take it easy on the guy, but that's not what you've seen, right?
Yeah, in training camp, he's been kind of the focal point of the offense again. He touched the football a ton. Now, you know, practice touches aren't necessarily the same as game touches. They're not tackling you, but at least by what we've seen this summer, they're not planning on going away from Saquon Barkley at all. It's still going to run through him. The interesting thing will be what happens when teams come out with game plans like the Chiefs had in the Super Bowl, because the Chiefs had a game plan, and honestly, their game plan defensively worked. They were able to slow down Saquon Barkley, but then the Eagles were able to pass the football, and I think that's what teams are still going to try to do this year. You're going to try to slow down Saquon as much as you can, and then it's incumbent on the offensive play caller, on Jalen Hurts, on A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert to make up for that in the passing game. And that's the beautiful thing about the way the Eagles are constructed is they feel like they can win either way. So, yeah, it's going to start with Saquon, though. And, yeah, it's like it's crazy because we know what the history tells us about a running back who has a workload like that and how they fare the next year and really sometimes throughout the rest of their careers. But at least what I've seen from Saquon this summer, he looks like the same guy. He looks as strong as ever, and I think they're going to use him a ton. Now, once they get in the season, we'll have a lot of Wednesdays off. Like, they're not going to work him hard in practice. We'll just try to get in the games and keep him as fresh as possible. But, yeah, he's going to be the focal point of the offense yet again.
The Eagles are today's Countdown to Kickoff team, talking about them with Dave Zangaro, NBC Sports Philadelphia. One reason, now we can talk about Saquon, the weapons on the outside. Of course, Jalen Hurts, the Super Bowl MVP. But when you flip it and look at that top-notch defense, one of the reasons, and it was front and center, that they end up winning the championship is because of the depth. And they could send guys in waves. Now, with a championship, you end up losing that. You can't bring everybody back. You lose depth on the D-line and in the secondary. Which area is a bigger concern this season?
Yeah, no question the secondary, because even though the defensive line showed out in the Super Bowl, that wasn't really the way the defense won all year. They won through the strength of their secondary, their coverage. They got a lot of coverage sacks. It was the back end of that defense was the strength. So now you don't have C.J. Gardner-Johnson. You don't have Darius Slay. You don't have Isaiah Rodgers, who needed to play an awful lot last year at corner. So you have two of those five spots up for grabs, and the way the competitions went in training camp wasn't really expected. We kind of thought Kelee Ringo, the former Georgia Bulldog, was going to run away with that outside corner job. He didn't, to the point where it might be a Dory Jackson starting in the opener. They make a trade for Jakorian Bennett. And on one hand, you're thinking, okay, well, that's the second cornerback job, not that big of a deal. But when you have Quinyon Mitchell on one side, he's not going to see a lot of footballs going his way. It's going to be to that other cornerback, and they've been really hesitant about the idea of moving Cooper DeJean outside just because he's been so good playing nickel corner that they want him in the action. They want him at least most of his snaps still at the nickel. So that cornerback two job, up for grabs. And then the safety position, they drafted Drew Macuba out of Texas in the second round. And he had just a couple injuries in training camp, and I think that's going to stop him from being the week one starter. So maybe at some point he wins that job, but it probably isn't from day one. And so, yeah, you're a little worried about the secondary. And at least on the defensive line, they still have Jalen Carter, right? Like, he's one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL, and he's going to warrant a lot of attention. If those other guys around him can just win some one-on-ones, they'll be in a good spot. But edge rusher is another position where I'm curious, like in September, if they realize they don't have enough there, I see like that could be a position where they make a trade.
Howie will definitely make a trade if Howie feels like he needs to make a trade. And I think that's what Eagles fans appreciate about Howie. I want to go back to something you brought up about the passing game and why they may look to maybe throw the ball a little bit more this year. So there's a number on Jalen Hurts passing yards. The over-under is 3175. 3175. He's gone over that in two of the last 3 years. He only played 15 games last year, Dave, and had 2903. If there's this focus on maybe not giving the ball to Barkley a million times, and there is this, you know, idea that maybe we can throw it more, do we think the over is worth a bet, 3175?
Yeah, and the other interesting angle to that is the Eagles have a tough schedule. So, like, you would assume that they'll be in some tight games where in the last few years there have been some blowout moments where they're just up big and they can run out the clock. There's probably going to be fewer of them this year, so you might need to pass the ball a little bit more just to win games. And, yeah, based on the way Kansas City played in the Super Bowl, and it's funny to talk about, like, that might be a template in a game where they just got blown out, but I really do think it will be in some respects. I think teams are going to try to take away Saquon as much as possible. And then it'll be up on, and I still think that's the book on Jalen Hurts too, right? It's like make him beat you with his arm, which, you know, at times he, in the regular season, at least he has struggled to be consistent as a passer. And then he shows up in the biggest moments possible. But I do like him hitting that over because I think that as long as he stays healthy, which is like the biggest caveat for any of those, but yeah, I think the offense just by natural regression is going to balance out a little bit more this year.
I'm looking at the, you mentioned the schedule, the opposing quarterbacks. It's pretty obvious. It jumps out. There's only a handful of times where you look at it and say, boy, that's going to be soft. You get the Giants twice in 3 weeks. So, okay, whoever ends up starting that week, it's probably not going to be a big challenge for this Eagles defense. Geno Smith late in the year. We don't know what J.J. McCarthy is going to be. Caleb Williams, who knows? Maybe he takes a leap forward. But outside of that, I'm looking. I'm like, oh, Pro Bowler. That guy should throw for 4,000 yards easily. Up and down the schedule. Do you see it the same way?
Yeah, it's a tough schedule. It's, you know, it's one of the toughest in the league, no matter how you break it down, whether it's, you know, wins last year or projected wins this year. It's just tough. There aren't many breaks in a schedule. And sometimes you feel like you need those breaks when you run through a gauntlet. But, you know, the one thing they have going for them is Vic Fangio. And we've seen him be able to figure out incredibly unique game plans for some of the best quarterbacks in the league. So they have that going for them. But, are they going to be the number one defense in the NFL again? Probably not. But you just hope for their sake they don't regress too far down that list. And I don't think they will, because even though they lost some key players, they still bring back the most important players on that defense. They have Jalen Carter. They have Nolan Smith. They have Zach Bond. They have Quinyon Mitchell. They have Cooper DeJean. And now they add Jahad Campbell, the first-round pick, who's looked really good in training camp, to the mix too. So are they as deep as last year? No, they're definitely not. But – they still have a lot of the star power that propelled them in 2024.
We've got about 30 seconds, Dave. The magic number for wins is 11.5. What's the move, over, under?
Ooh, it's a high number. Yeah. I think I have the over, but just barely. And it's such a high number that, it's going to be tough to do it, but I still think they're the class of the NFC East. I think they're going to win their division games, and I think that's going to be enough to get them over.
Dave, D. Zangaro, NBCS, over on X. Dave Zangaro, NBC Sports Philadelphia. Thank you so much for all the intel on the Eagles. Best of luck. Enjoy the football season, all right?
All right, guys. Take care.
Thank you, Dave. Good stuff there. I'm surprised that they're kind of running Saquon the same. I thought they would be backing off completely in camp. That's interesting. Makes me like our bet more.
Under.
Just saying.
We flip. This schedule, we flip when we have to.
Brutal. Schedule is brutal. Yeah, exactly. Joe O, Sammy P, college football weekend. It's a big one. That's next on the BetMGM Network. Getting you set for Labor Day weekend. Joe Ostrowski, Sam Panionovich, thanks for hanging out with us on this Friday. Big slate of college football games coming up Saturday. Sunday continues into Monday. We get to see Bill Belichick on a college sideline as the head coach for the very first time. That's going to be fascinating. I'm sure that number is going to move as we get closer and closer. We want to go over some of the games that certainly stand out to us over the weekend. But as we were going over the results from last night, we're laughing about the room. We always love to. The room is particularly bad early in the season. I know it's small sample size theater, but we've certainly noticed that with various sports. Scotty Providence tweets us at @bet_sweat, Sam at @SBShoot. I'm at Joe Ostrowski. And I know we're getting a lot of new listeners. You have the start of a football season, everybody's jumping in the pool. Maybe they went away in the offseason, but now they're back. With college football week one, NFL week one, less than a week away. Here's Scotty. Is fading the room a good long-term strategy? I'm so intrigued. Thinking emoji. Long-term suggests blind betting. I wouldn't go there, but I guess what I'm saying, Sam, is particularly early in the season, when nobody seems to know anything and you're figuring teams out, but the public has these strong opinions, usually opinions on the favorites. I think that's a decent strategy. It's not the worst idea.
Blind is a little far. It's difficult to say blind, but let's just put it this way. If the room picks 1,000 games, 1,000, it's going to win about 43% would be my guess. 430. So that's 570 losses. That's where I'm at. So I've built content around a guy from Chicago who I call the bartender, who has had 5 NFL seasons so far. 5. He won last year. He had his first winning season. But his percentage is still in the mid-40s.
And so people were mad at you because he won. Oh, he finally had a good year and people were mad at you.
It happens. He did wrap the season, though, with an 0-7 postseason run, which was outstanding, including losing the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, Jalen Hurts, no touchdown, and Purple Gatorade, 0-3 in the Super Bowl. But my point is, whether it's the bartender or the room or whatever fade you want to talk about, there's always a chance in a small pocket or a small sample size that these people can win. Over the long haul, they will lose. They will. The number one pick at a sports book on a given day is not going to win more times than not. There wouldn't be sports books if that was the case. If the number one pick from the public won at 55%, there wouldn't be BetMGM. So can the room be a solid fade over time? 100%. I would not advise people, though, to just blast off at a random point and just fade away. It's something that you have to sustain over time. We're not talking come in and start betting 500 against the room. You have to do it responsibly and do it where it's efficient and you can manage your bankroll accordingly. If you want to take 2% of your bankroll and start betting that against the room's top play, fine. If you want to just start spraying the AK, though, and just going crazy, what happens if the room gets hot? Just like the bartender did last year. And the room wins 7 out of 9. you're going to be pissed at us. Well, they told me to fade the room. Over time, yes. Over 9 games, though, the room could go 6-3, 7-2. Over 100 games, the room is probably going to go 45-55. Over 1,000 games, it might be worse.
The room goes 1-4 last night. And I think it's worth pointing out that, okay, 1-4, that's terrible. That's a bad night. Not going to happen every night. Doesn't mean it's going to happen tonight. I would say a lot of those losses, 2-5, close. The most popular play, not close. They were laying it with Boise. Laying it with Boise last night, never a shot. So take that for what it is. There are a lot of people jumping in on Boise last night that couldn't name one player. Okay. I mean, that's the part of the room that we're talking about. And that's the information we want to get. Joe O, Sammy P, this is BetSweats, BetMGM Network. Go for the end zone without breaking a sweat with a college football no sweat parlay token. You'll get your stake back in bonus bets if you don't win at BetMGM. All right, this weekend, college football. We got to start with a game that we agree on. And I don't know if you're surprised that I agree with you, because you've been backing Miami for a couple of years, both years on this show. And, you know, I'm known as the Notre Dame guy on the show. Yeah, I usually go to a couple games a year, follow them very closely. And we picked Notre Dame to go to the title game. You were in on that as well last year. But this spot on the road, opening night, redshirt freshman quarterback laying 2.5, neither of us can get there, Sam. We like the dog.
I took 3 in the summer. I also have Miami to make the playoff at 2-1 and Carson Beck to win the Heisman at 37-1. That number is gone. It's been gone. But that's why you bet a lot of this stuff in the summer. Look, Notre Dame may have an elite defense. I just don't know about early, because these guys have never played together. This current group has never done it together. They lost 4 starters to the NFL draft. 4. That's not great to replace early. And then, oh, by the way, Al Golden, the mastermind of last year's defense, is in the NFL now. Mm-hmm. That's a lot to replace. And I know that they have the talent there. It's not a knock on the players that Marcus Freeman has brought in, because he's been a tremendous recruiter and he is building a monster in South Bend. But to replace all those guys, Morrison, your number one corner, Watts, your number one safety, Kaiser, your do everything cleanup guy in the middle at linebacker, Riley Fitz on the D-line. Those are a lot of guys you got to replace. Or Riley Mills, excuse me. Riley Mills, not Riley Fitz. I knew a kid named Riley Fitz. So you got to replace all that production. You have the talent, but you don't have the returning production at a lot of positions. And a lot of people think that Chris Ash, former Rutgers head coach, you're going to just drop him in and everything's going to be fine. I don't know. Also think about this, and we were Notre Dame guys last year talking about Ohio State to beat Notre Dame in the championship when the bracket came out. So we don't hate Notre Dame, and I know you don't hate Notre Dame. If you look at their schedule last year, they were very, very fortunate in a lot of these games. As good as their defense was last year, they missed a bunch of starting quarterbacks, whether it was injury or guys getting benched. How about in the playoff? You didn't even have to face Carson Beck because he got hurt. You got to face Gunnar Stockton in the playoff. Penn State, Abdul Carter was hurt on the defensive side of the ball. So you had a lot of injury luck last year. And then you finally face a fully healthy team in Ohio State and, you know, you lose. But the Virginia game, their quarterback was benched in that game. You didn't face Navy starter. Horvath was out in that game. That was the 51-14 game where Horvath, I think he got hurt. Yeah, he was 7 of 13, got knocked out of the game early. Don't believe they faced Haynes King last year when they took on Georgia Tech. Yeah, Pyron played. The backup played in that game. They were very, very fortunate in a lot of games last year. And my point is, I want to see this defense do it against what I believe is an elite quarterback. And I think Carson Beck is an elite quarterback.
Speaking of that playoff run, that's a reason we liked him. We were looking at the path like, oh, Stockton instead of Beck, quite possibly. We love this. Look at the value that you're getting there. They get Indiana at home to start things off. They'll take care of business there. And then they can surprise Georgia. And then now you get to play a real team. Where you at, Dykstra? Haven't heard from you. Haven't heard from you in many months. Now you get to play a real team.
Oh, he's there. He's combing through the beard. Combing through the beard.
He's taking notes. Look, man, we like Penn State this year. Not last year. This year, we do. A lot of people like Penn State.
Penn State should have beat Notre Dame. We were on Notre Dame. We got lucky to win that game. Abdul Carter couldn't move.
Well, I saw another James Franklin loss. That's what I saw. But no, your point about early, I think, is certainly justified. And you'll see people throw out the trend about when Notre Dame's less than a field goal favorite or a dog, Freeman's awesome. That's fair. 9-2-1 against the spread. That's what's happened. But early in the year, do you remember when that NIU loss happened? Yeah, it was week two last year. Week two, 2022. Remember when that Marshall loss happened? 0-2 start to the season there. Ohio State, then Marshall. And they wanted to fire Freeman two games into his coaching career. Tough starts a lot of times. And if they lose, it doesn't mean it's over. Far from it, because this Miami team's pretty good, and they're going to be in the mix at the ACC with Clemson, probably in the championship game. We'll see. That's certainly the expectation. But, yeah, both of us like Miami. Probably not getting a three. Probably going to sit here at 2.5. But you know the Notre Dame money's coming if it hasn't come there already. So I just don't see it getting a three. Good grab by you.
We see a couple threes in Vegas, but most of the books are 2.5 across the country. Circa, Superbook, yeah. South Point all went to three in the last 24 hours. I keep hearing about this elite defense. I would like to see it. I also think that Notre Dame in week one and Notre Dame in week 10 are going to be completely different teams.
Yes, sir.
I am not selling Notre Dame big picture. I do not love the spot. I do not love a freshman quarterback going on the road early. But this team is still 10 or 11 win good. I just don't think it happens Sunday night in South Beach.
Yep. Totally agree. All right, Sam, throw another one at us for this weekend. What do you love?
Well, we've talked about the Ohio State-Texas total, and Michael Felder swayed me, and then I swayed you. This thing is now crossing through 47. I'm looking at the move right now. It is 46.5 at multiple books. They keep betting this under. And I said, I don't think it touches 47. Not only has it touched 47, it's blown through 47. Chris has 46.5. Blue book, green book, 46.5. A lot of 47 all over the yard right now. They keep betting this under. And maybe I'm just missing it. Maybe this is a 14-10 game. I think the total's too low, man. At 46.5, I love that bet over. Love it.
Whew. See what happened to the side in the last 24 hours?
Ohio State, pick 'em. How about Texas minus one at Circa last night? They took a $500,000 bet on the Horns.
Good. Mm-hmm. Shea and Irving, I know you're upset, but calm down a little bit. Like he's all in on the Longhorns. Oh, man. this morning I'm in the kitchen. I'm like, I got to hear Shea. Daughter's in the other room. I turn on the pod. Just every third word. Just an F-bomb. It was phenomenal. My daughter's like looking up. She certainly perked up at 7 a.m. Like, what's going on over here? Yeah, I let it roll. Didn't stop it. Let him keep going. Shea's in the mix right now. I'm sure he's jumping on DP this morning. Yeah, I liked Texas. You talked me into liking the over more, and now we see that move. Like, Texas at getting 2.5. Oh, yeah. But now it's a pick 'em. There's some spots that went to Texas favorite. in the last day.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they wanted to write Ohio State, and they did. So Ohio State is mostly a 1-point favorite. It's a pick'em at Circa, so they did get that Ohio State money. I would also like to correct myself. It was a $550,000 bet on Texas that got the line to minus one. But then there have been people that have been willing to take Ohio State pick and minus one. So not good two-way. The books need Ohio State for sure. And I would love this game to land 48, 49, 50. I know the wise guys, the sharpest guys in the world took under 50 and a half and under 50. I don't think the sharpest guys are taking under 47 and 47 and a half, but I could be well wrong there. I think this is the time to blast over. I like Illinois to win by a million today against Western, and I like Oregon State money line against Cal Saturday night, minus 120.
More college football next hour. Kelly in Vegas will be joining us at the top of the hour like she does every single Friday. Next hour is going to be fun. Kelly in Vegas, Ryan Horvath. But also, we've got some NFL numbers we want to dissect on the other side. Joe O, Sammy P, Bet Sweats on the BetMGM Network. 20 minutes from now, Kelly in Vegas will drop by. Her college football plays for the weekend. Ryan Horvath as well, big Packers fan. He'll react to Micah Parsons. He'll also have a ton of college football plays as well. So we'll go over that with Horvy. Horvy is not on the flagship show on the network. This is not the flagship show on the network, FYI. But it is Bet Sweats, BetMGM Network. Let's go over.
No. Let's go. Let's do it. We might as well do it
what?
Now. Can we do it? Can we rip through the story or no?
Yeah, we can rip through the story. It's a huge story.
So massive. You mentioned flagship. The You Better You Bet program is serving as the flagship show on the network. So I didn't look up the definition of flagship.
Okay.
I just did right now. Okay. So according to Webster's, flagship is the best or most important thing owned or produced by a particular organization.
Damn, that hurts.
So who said it was the flagship show? I'm just curious.
Okay, you tell me, is it a quote or is it just a statement? Is it one of those things where Barrett just said it's by Barrett Media where we don't have a byline? Because I can't stand that.
It is by BSM staff. BSM staff.
I hate that. Okay, so nobody put their name on it.
No. But that's probably Barrett, right?
But sometimes he puts his name on it too. So this one, we don't know.
We don't know. But in print, this is not a quote. This is a Barrett Sports Media comment. The You Better You Bet program is serving as the flagship show on the network. Okay? I didn't get that email from the BetMGM Network, but it's nice to know that. Couple other things that I kind of wanted to pick at, but I don't want to make the bosses that upset. It's just it is funny without having any conversation who the flagship show is.
Well, they just did. They just told you through somebody else.
Okay.
I don't think Bear came up with that on his own. To your point.
Don't know.
Okay.
I think we do a pretty good show. I've heard that our numbers are up 200% from last year.
Yeah. The numbers are doing, they're very happy with the numbers. Unless you're telling us that they're happy and then they're really not behind the scenes.
It's funny. I don't care. It is funny though. It's very funny. Like some of the wording in the story.
We need hotter takes. If we had the hottest takes, maybe we would. We need to be better, Sam. That's us. That's the bosses trying to motivate us. Without having that uncomfortable conversation, they're like, okay, we're going to share this. We're going to put this out there. The boys are going to see it. They know what's happening in their business. And we're going to motivate them. We're going to say they are not the flagship. They're motivating Horvy too. And we'll get Horvy's thoughts coming up at 11:20 Eastern. He was going to share them anyways, whether we asked about it or not. They're motivating Horvy. We're not the flagship, FYI. But congratulations to Nick. It's good. Good stuff. It's good for the network. I mean, you look around and hate to say it, but it's obvious to us. I don't know if other people are noticing it, that a lot of sports betting media. That's the other thing about this story. It's, and you know, we're having fun with our teammates. It's all good. Talks about how sports betting media has exploded. Hey, Barrett, like, look around. That's not what's happening anymore. There's a lot of shows getting canceled, a lot of shows that are going away that carry massive audiences. So that used to be the case. That is not the case as we enter the 2025 football season.
Jason Barrett just writes what he's fed. I mean, I'll say it.
Right.
He just writes what he's fed. He always has.
Yeah. Yeah. Look around. There are a lot of shows that have gone away, but I understand sports betting is not sports betting coverage. Sports betting media is not number one on his list, but yeah, that's not going on right now, but we're doing very well. We're thriving and we're expecting to have an awesome season. And my point being though, that it tells me that the network and listeners and viewers to this network should tell you that we're healthy and we're thriving, that you have contract extensions that are being handed out while other shows are going away, while other networks are consolidating. So it's a good sign for all of us. Congratulations to Nick, for sure. Kelly in Vegas coming up in a little bit. Oh, man, the tracking continues. I mean, I can't wait now. I know we have fun with GRP, but, you know, he's tweeting about it nonstop. But now, in addition to our bets, it's extra incentive. We want Kelly in Vegas. We pay close attention to her picks as it is. I mean, it's a guest, a weekly guest on our show, giving out selections. But now you really have to track it because there's so much on the line. And this same person, starting on Thursday, is going to be charging $100 to pick himself. Can't wait.
The irony is so funny. I'd also, I'd like to tease here. I'm not going to tell you what the picks are. You and I have known Kelly a long time. She usually plays blank. Fill in the blank. Favorites, dogs, overs, unders. What does she usually play?
Dogs. Dogs.
Well, I have the list, and it's three favorites.
Out of how many picks?
Three.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Woo! I do remember there was one week last year, and I brought it up to her. Like, you're usually on dogs, and it was a week where she was mostly on favorites. And you're like, yeah, well, the numbers got me there. So she's aware too, as well. So that's interesting. And last night, favorites really struggled. Not that that has anything to do with this weekend. Just throwing it out there. I can't wait to see which favorites are these. Any of the marquee matchups?
I'm not telling you.
Damn it. Okay. People will have to wait. Time spent listening on the thriving BetMGM network, but not the flagship show of the network. All right. There was something that was set out the other day. Some numbers that you found intriguing. I don't know if it's actionable, but you thought it was worthy of a discussion. What did you see?
There's a lot of really cool stuff at Sumer Sports. I would suggest people sign up for the newsletter. They do a really good job, S-U-M-E-R, only one M, S-U-M-E-R-Sports.com. So they have a website, and they also have a newsletter. And they did breakdowns called Stats and Scheme. Sean and Tej, they did AFC and NFC and broke down important metrics for every team. Naturally, I'd like to start with this one. The Brian Flores identity is clear. A league-leading 16% blitz rate out of two high shells combined with Jonathan Grenard, who was eighth in pressure rate, and Andrew Van Ginkle thriving off the edge to create nightmares for offenses. The Vikings are a rotation and disguise-heavy defense that is not afraid to attack you with run blitzes on early downs. With questions at cornerback, this defense may need more Flores shenanigans to win the NFC North. Just blitz on every play. I dare you. Just bring the house on every play. Send Grenard home, baby. Let's go.
Are the Vikings going to be an under team? I'm just thinking, you know, based on our conversation the other day with Charch as well, he's expecting them to be more run heavy with McCarthy, and they beefed up the offensive line. He expects more runs there. Are they going to be an under team this year?
Could be. I don't think they want to put a lot on J.J. McCarthy's plate. People keep saying he can't do this or he can't be that. And I think his job is so simple. I think he comes in and has to do what Kyle Orton did when Orton got to Chicago and just not turn the ball over. As long as they don't turn it over, they're going to run it well. They've got the speed on the outside. And this defense is loaded, loaded. Now, not a three-year plan, maybe not a five-year plan, because you got guys that are getting up there. But they have basically put their chips on defense all in by going to get Allen and Hargrave. They are all in on this year's defense. I think the hope in Minnesota is that J.J. McCarthy can ascend, and by year three of the McCarthy project, this is year one, by year three, they're better on offense than they are on defense. But right now, their plan to me is very obvious. Win on defense, protect the ball on offense.
What else you got? I know something else NFC-wise popped to you.
Bears.
Okay.
Bears, Bears, Bears. They are talking about all the motion and the play action in the middle of the pass. So they broke down the Ben Johnson offenses in Detroit. They were sixth in motion, first in play action, first in middle of the field pass rate. They also had a veteran quarterback that knows how to go through his progressions. And my big fear here is that this Ben Johnson offense is too complicated for fingernails. I think this could be a problem this year. Are you sold that he's the answer? Are we sure that he's the guy?
Are you talking about Caleb Williams or Michael Felder?
Caleb Williams.
Oh, okay. Because he had the painted fingernails the other day on the show, which I loved. That was a lot of fun. Am I sold he's the guy? No, I haven't seen it yet. I think there's a very good chance that he's the guy. I believe that that was part of the reason that Ben Johnson decided, okay, I'm getting a job. It's time for me to go. I'm finally ready. And Chicago's the spot for me. I'm going to stay in the division of the Detroit Lions. He wasn't scared. He knows how great the division is, which got a whole lot better yesterday with the addition of Micah Parsons over to Green Bay. I think he believes in him. And so I think that was part of it. And if it doesn't work, he has enough capital where he's going to get his pick. So it's okay if it doesn't work as well. When I saw success this preseason, and it's preseason, take it for what it is, tight end. And I just kept thinking about the tight ends in that Detroit Lions offense as well. They don't have the running backs, but with the addition of Loveland, drafting him in the first round, they do have the tight ends with Kmet and Loveland. So I think those guys are going to have a successful year. They don't have all the pieces yet.
They also, Sumer Sports says, the Buffalo Bills, best offense in the NFL.
Woo. All right. Can't argue that one. Kelly in Vegas with their college plays on the other side. This is the BetMGM Network.